everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Cassell, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Syracuse won the second football game of the year, something we hadn't done since 2019 week. Happy, hopefully this is the end of us playing Liberty for a long, long time week. What else we got?
I don't think Wildhack wants to hear from fans anymore about not wanting the game.
I mean, it doesn't seem like they've been very receptive over that, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say, like, they probably just wanted, knowing SU, they got into the contract and then, like, they're like, oh, well, we're just going to play it out. We'll never do it again. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. Once you get into the contract, it's hard to, like, kind of go back on it. Right. The problem was getting into the contract. Like, it's not like we didn't know, and not to do this whole, like, you know, complain about Liberty. We've done that for 2 years in a row now.
Here we are.
But here we are. No, but it's like, you know, we knew what the school was. We got to be the subject of a viral moment the first year, even though we won, which is fun. Second year, not so much fun. Malik Willis is really good. That's not so much fun. But, you know, hopefully, I would love to get a win. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know how much, like, we don't know how much anyone was paid for this. Rumors are that we might have been paid, which
it would not surprise. Based on the trouble that Liberty's had to, like, gain, I mean, they're fielding full schedules, like, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it hasn't been the biggest struggle, but overall, like, you know, no conference is really super interested in letting them in at this juncture. Like, they're somewhere between being, like, kind of shunned and kind of, like, begrudgingly accepted in the FBS world. But because of that, and because they have deep coffers, like, there's a fairly decent chance that even though we have a 2-for-1 here, that, you know, either there's no money exchanging hands, in which case, like, we got the extra game for nothing, or we got paid. But, you know, I expect it's probably the former, if I had to guess, which is still, like, a kind of a crazy deal, considering.
Well, that's why, I mean, that's why Syracuse did it. Like honestly, like, the only thing that makes me feel even mildly okay about this, them playing out the string of games, is the fact that they probably said, if we didn't pay a dime for this, why would we then pay Liberty of all places money to get out of the game?
Right. And that's kind of the, you know, once you got into it, like, I don't think any of us expected Syracuse to back out of it, because again, like, it wasn't like something happened in between us signing the contract and then the games happening that changed the whole fabric of the thing. Like, the fabric was there already. So yeah, I'm just glad, you know, I'm glad we're getting out of it. I would really like to win this game. Just losing 2 of the 3 would not be a great look. And unfortunately, like, put everything else aside, Liberty's pretty good, which is also an annoyance, but a fact of life here. Like, they're a favorite at the Dome, which is crazy to say, but it's also, like, legit. They're quite a good football team.
Yeah, they're a pretty good football team. They were very good last year, despite the weird season. This season, it's kind of tough to get a read on them so far, because they're facing, you know, the sort of dregs schedule that one might expect. Really, even last year, it's kind of hard to gauge how really good they were. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, they didn't really run away from us until late in the third last year against a depleted, injured, and this is an excuse, you shouldn't lose Liberty, but I would say that, like, the most impressive game for them last year might have been the 1-point loss to a very good NC State team.
Yeah, I mean, they beat Vautech, but Vautech was a mess. They beat Coastal, which, like, Coastal was very, very good last year, and that Cure Bowl, again, I don't love celebrating Liberty-involved things. That Cure Bowl was great on from a football standpoint, really fun. So, yeah, they were pretty legit. Like, they beat 2 ACC teams, won narrowly. Us, like, as you said, I like on Wikipedia, I'm looking at the Liberty Wikipedia from last year, for the attendance on our game, it just says 0 in parentheses behind closed doors. I'm like, this is technically correct, but it's a weird note.
So if you go to Syracuse, no one was there. Wikipedia page, does it say 0 behind closed doors the
entire time? I'm looking, yes, it does for every game. Our games, the Pitt game, the at UNC game, yeah, they all say behind closed doors. It seemed like they weren't on TV. Like, we were like, we have the SMU TV ban, which
this I was saying, this takes away my article of, well, my upcoming book about the 2020 Syracuse football season called Behind Closed Doors.
the team that just couldn't get a game canceled, no matter what they did.
What if I told you that a team didn't get COVID and played every game? What if I told you no one wanted to watch that team?
We were like the South Park Little League team last year. Like, we just couldn't get out of it, out of things. We just had to play as much baseball as we could.
Oh God! Now I want to write the book and actually call it that.
It has to be in parentheses, though.
Yes, it has to be in parentheses. Fun fact: Syracuse has to read my manuscript out of its publishing duties to an alum.
I didn't know that. That's good to know.
They do have to read my manuscript. they don't have to publish it, but they do have to read it. So, fun fact: if you want to get published by Syracuse, that is one route for you to take.
I think that they should publish your book about the 1-10 2020 Syracuse Orange, or 1-9, I forget what the record was, Syracuse Orange. I hope they put it on the little bookshelf they have at Shine for like books published by Syracuse alums. You and George Saunders.
It's Lincoln and the Bardo, and then it's Behind Closed Doors.
I also hope that your prose is just as like bonkers as Lincoln and the Bardo.
So, and then the sign in between them is just, would you rather? Jesus, this takes me back. This is like a vintage episode of like,
really, yeah, 3 years. We're off to an incredible start. So Liberty, they 3-0.
They're 3-0. They beat Campbell, as one does. That's not a school. It's just a man named Campbell.
I love Troy. Campbell because of the camels, and I wish there were more camel teams.
Troy, another gentleman.
A pretty good school. I mean, Troy's pretty good. Like, yes. I just checked Bill C, and Troy's ranked 65 in SP Plus. Liberty is ranked 43. So, like, Troy's a pretty good, and Troy's always pretty decent. So that's like a solid win. They won by a touchdown, so it wasn't like they like blew their doors off, or else I'd be a little more concerned. But the other two games, Campbell and then ODU, who I believe is ranked in the 120s, like they're one of the five worst FBS teams. I think they're 126 ahead of the incredible group of ULM, UMass, New Mexico State, and still playing football, the UConn Huskies,
supposedly,
who are at -37.4. I don't know historically if this is like getting, they're worst in offense and defense, and they're 124th out of 130 in special teams. Like, that's got to be an all-time bad team so far.
What was the, didn't Sean tweet about it the other day? It was like looking at the FCS plus FBS ratings, and UConn was, I think New Mexico State was the only school, like a little bit, UConn was like somewhere like the 140 to 150 range. It's historically awful.
Like, I remember that SMU team, the I think the year June Jones quit like a week and a half into the season.
Just mailed it.
I think they were, bottom, the last ranked team in offense and defense, but I think they managed to win a game. And if my memory serves, and I just remember this, I think that game was against UConn.
Yeah, it's pretty wild over there. I wish we faced them this year.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, we've been fine against them, so it's not like a big concern. But yeah, it was the 2014 SMU Mustangs. June Jones resigned on September 8th, which is impressive. Tom Mason took over. They lost their first. They lost their first 11 games, and then on December 6th. At UConn, 27-20 victory, baby. But I believe they still finished last in both offense and defense in SMP Plus.
It's a delightful way to cap the season.
So when UConn beats Clemson, it'll be like largely the same thing. they're not.
I mean, I'm not gonna say it's impossible. It's impossible. But Clemson, we'll talk about them in a couple weeks. That's definitely an increasingly entertaining game that I'm not going to talk about an upset, but I do think there's a fun world where it's at least like a good game.
If Syracuse gets two wins that between now and then, which is Liberty at FSU, which is prime right now, and versus Wake, who I think is increasingly looks pretty good. I think you can not put Clemson on upset alert, but like put Clemson on like, hey, weird stuff has happened in this game before alert. Because Clemson's offense is a mess, but as you said, we'll talk about that in the future.
Yeah, and against the Syracuse defense that that is fun to watch. I think I'm really liking what could occur there.
Yes, we could certainly use that kind of like early Babers era, like really fun, silly upset that gets our people paying attention again. It's been a couple years.
Yeah, and we'll get into more about the Liberty game. But speaking of fun things that would get some good attention for Syracuse, I feel like we were part of it, but a lot of others were too. The Give Sean Tucker 44 drum has been banging louder and louder. I feel like it started a bit in during the Ohio game. And I feel like people were pretty on board with it, some people were on board with it even after last year, despite what would be like middling returns historically. But Sean Tucker did do a lot of, despite a pretty bad team and a pretty poor line and some pretty bad play calling and a very one-dimensional approach. And he still managed to put on a pretty impressive performance last year. This year, he's picked up not just where he left off, but he's definitely up the level of his game. Obviously, his performance against Albany speaks for itself, but he also did very well against Ohio. At this point, like he's well on his way to, knock on wood, eclipsing the 1,000-yard mark for the first time in quite a while for Syracuse. He's definitely on his way to potentially several records. Who knows? But in any case, I think Tucker deserves 44 because it finally takes that number out of the rafters, puts it on the field, allows the legend to live on. And I think, and I mentioned this in the article the other day, I think it's an appropriate way to pay tribute to Floyd Little, who we lost earlier this year. So I think, to me, it's given that we don't know how the season's going to turn out, if we took 44 out of the Raptors and Tucker continued to play as well as he's playing, I think it ultimately ends up being a net positive for Syracuse. So that probably means they won't do it, but I sincerely hope it's at least being entertained.
Yeah, I feel like we've just flirted with it so much. And it's a program, like the program to use, obviously, like it's not going to change the ability of the players on the field. It's not going to like seismically shift like whether or not they win games. But I feel like the program can just use some kind of infusion of excitement and like just some kind of like karmic change with how down things have been the last couple of years. And we flirted with the 44 thing so many times, even just since like you and I were in school. It's been, I feel like every other year there's something, and like, and not just like rumors, but it's addressed by whoever the coach is. It gets addressed by the AD. Like it's like going to some committee that no one knows, anything about.
Council of 44.
The Council of 44. We had Floyd Little talking about it like late in his life about how he wanted players to wear it again. And like, I'm totally fine if we don't want to just like throw it at whatever, running back recruit that we are using in that way. I know that's how it was used for a bit. But like, I think the Sean Tucker type deal is like a nice middle ground. Like you have the right player, whether it's a running back, if you want to do it to open up to other positions, like I'm open to the discussion about it. I think like at the very least, like a great running back who seems like a good representative of the university and is like doing the types of things on the football field that Sean Tucker is doing, like that you can still use that in recruiting, even if it's not promised to a single player. If it's like this thing that we're not going to have every year, it's not going to be like someone's 44 every single season or whatever, but it's that special thing that if you like come and earn it, you can do it. Like LSU has number 18, which is like their big number, and that floats to different players, but like that's something they can earn. I know other programs have kind of similar things, and I don't know. I've always been a proponent of like, let's get this thing back living, even if it's not something we have every year. Like I'm fine if there just isn't the right person, we don't just give it away, just randomly, or we don't give it away when it's not earned, but at least open it up to being earned. Like I think that that's the best way to honor the legacy of like the fact that number was passed from great player to great player for years. So yeah, I would love to see it. I'm skeptical because it seems like the powers that be have just been afraid to do it for a while. And I don't know. We just need someone to make a bold stand and be like, no, we're gonna do this. We're gonna bring it back the way it was used originally, or some version of that, and reward someone, whether it's Sean Tucker or not, for like being a great player and carrying that mantle. Because like I don't know, I feel like the program just needs something, like some kind of oomph at this point after the last 2 years, and that could certainly be it. Like I bet you'll see obviously you don't do it as like an attendance boost thing, but I bet you'll see like a renewed interest from some of the Steptoe people if like you're making the big stride to like bring it out of the rafters and put it on someone's back.
Yeah, honestly, like to me, this is the fact that we haven't had a player wear it in 23 years is problematic. You know, the fact that there's been this, and I know Jim Brown's actually been against it when asked about it in the past, bringing it out of mothballs. To me, it just seems like, why? Like not every single player who's worn it has been Jim Brown or Floyd Little, you know, or Ernie Davis. Like, it doesn't have to be somebody who is a Hall of Fame caliber player every single time. It can be someone who's just excellent. And like you said, on and off the field, Tucker seems to entertain at least the number and wearing it, which I think is a big part of it, is like the fact that he understands the legacy and wants to be part of that. Like, that should speak for itself, especially given what the school's kind of done to you know, mythologize the number at this point. And I think, you know, now, like, the last person to wear it was Rob Conrad. Like, he last took a snap when, like, none of these kids on the team were born. Like, that's not something that's sustainable as a tradition, and acting like just putting a 44 in the rafters like means something to people long term. Like, half these kids probably don't really have a full concept of who Jim Brown was. And if they don't have a concept of who Jim Brown was, they probably don't have a ton of understanding, you know, of Floyd Little, aside from, you know, when he was alive, when he was around the program. They probably don't have much understanding of even Ernie Davis, unless they've seen the Express. Like, there's just this real vacuum between, you know, what I think we're applying to 44 and the reality, and realistically putting it back in the field, even like you said, if it's not every year, just putting it back in the rotation as an option for a player to be able to earn, it makes it real and tangible again, and embraces again the fact that Tucker likes the idea. Like, you know what, if somebody asked him and he skirted away from it, I'd say, fine, he doesn't want it, that's fine. I'm not going to force it on anyone. But he seems to entertain it. And, like, we really haven't heard anything about 44 since, I know, like, Babers and Wildhack were doing that tour around the country to some big alumni clubs. I know they were out here in L.A., and I saw them speak downtown. Like, they entertained the idea, and it definitely was passed along as just a, yeah, like, on and off the field success, and we'll talk to the Council of 44. And that's, like, really the last we heard of it, and that was, you know, back in 2019, summer, I believe. So it's been a couple of years since we've heard about it. I think it's worth addressing that you know, Tucker could be in line to receive it. And even if that waits until next year, and I hope it wouldn't, I think that it absolutely needs to be an open discussion, because, like, it's not that you lose Tucker if you don't give him 44, but at the same time, like, why miss out on that opportunity to have somebody wear the number again and do so successfully?
Yeah, I just think it's such a missed opportunity. Like, the number became something different the moment that Ernie Davis took it and had the career he had. Like, if they had just retired after Jim Brown, then you're like, that's Jim Brown's number. It's one person's, you know, he was obviously arguably the greatest football player ever. You know, you hang it up. But the fact that Ernie Davis took it and built in the legacy, and Floyd Little took it and built in the legacy, like, it's so far beyond that. And with how the school uses it, it's the zip code, it's the phone number. It's like the school itself has promoted 44 so far beyond what just one retired number is. And to treat it like a retired number, for even though it was a couple people, is like so downplaying what it means. So yeah, to bring it out, to make it something that can be attainable for a great Syracuse player. And like you said, it doesn't have to be like an NFL superstar. I mean, part of the thing that's special about college sports is that, you know, legends, on-campus legends don't have to go on to be, you know, don't have to go on to be a Jim Brown or a Floyd Little in the NFL. Like, you can have, like, Rob Conrad obviously made a huge impact here. He was not, you know, he played in the NFL. He was not a Hall of Fame level player in the NFL, but, like, I don't think most people would say he was a failed 44 or whatever. So, I mean, if Sean Tucker leaves here with, like, some kind of real legacy, an all-ACC type player, someone who helped guide the program back to, like, finally out of some kind of doldrums or death of Babers era, back settled on, you know, firm footing, like, I think that he'll be more than worth the number, and will have definitely helped continue on that legacy, especially because it's not like we have a perfect track record. Like, we've had guys who weren't very good wear it, so it's, I'm not even worried about, like, staining it or whatever, as long as, you know, Tucker A doesn't do anything to get in trouble, which there's no indication he will. He seems like a great guy. And B, like, continues to play well and live up in that regard. And so far, like, we're getting a pretty decent sample size that he's a really, really good player. So I'm really not worried about it. I would love to see it, whether it's him, whether it's someone after him. But the fact that he thinks enough about it to be like, you know, a lot of these guys are so into, and this isn't a knock at all. I know it's going to sound like it for a second, but like, they're into their personal brands, and part of that is the number they wear, and that's totally legitimate. I think that's totally fine. And if someone was turned down 44 on that level, I would totally respect it. But the fact that he seems to understand the history enough to like embrace it and welcome that possibility, even if it was just one Instagram post, I think that's pretty special and shows that like the embers are still there as long as we want to hopefully spark them and actually take them somewhere. So I'm hoping these discussions are happening on campus in the Wild Hack and Babers parts of the world, but it's hard to know, although it's clearly like starting to percolate back up in the fan base, and so you know it'll probably reach those places anyway at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, maybe if SU can win this weekend, maybe it's a conversation point going into next week. But Dan, go for it.
I was going to say, if they win and Sean Tucker runs for like 150 yards, like, someone's going to ask Babers.
Oh, of course. And they should.
Yeah.
Realistically. It's definitely rising up. And I hope we do hear about it. But Dan, you've been away for, you know, a couple weeks. What have you been drinking of late before we get into some more Liberty talk in the second half of the pod?
So, I got to sample a fair amount of stuff in the greater Jackson Hole / Eastern Idaho area where I was 2 weeks ago for a bachelor party. Definitely the highlight was Melvin Brewing, which I believe is right in Jackson. I didn't get there, but their stuff was pretty well distributed around. Had their Jesus Mexican Lager, which was really delicious. Had their Back into Haze, which was a hazy IPA. Very good. Basically everything I had from them was like really rock solid. So if you're out in that part of the world, definitely check out, if you find any Melvin, that was probably the best bet, from local stuff. I also tried, Saison from Citizen 33, in Idaho, which was pretty decent. Had some Amber Ale from, Grand Teton Brewing, a couple others from Grand Teton that I forgot to check into, but they had a variety pack that I tried. So nothing, I think Melvin was definitely the highlight. Some other stuff was like really solid. I wouldn't say anything blew me away. And then, just some other standard stuff. Been drinking some, Lagunitas, some Allagash, some, Maine, Peeper Ale recently. Yeah, those were definitely the things that, stood out from the Western trip I took.
Very nice. Yeah. Melvin stuff actually gets down here occasionally too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some good stuff down here. I had some good stuff when I was up in Montana that got over that way. So definitely recommend a brewery. Couple things on my end. It's pumpkin season, so definitely I was having some pumpkin beers this past weekend. My wife's a big fan of them. Had some pumpkin head ale from Shipyard, as well as some smashed pumpkin. Also had pumpkin ale from Dogfish Head, and then to continue the fall theme, I had some Evil Dead Red from Alesmith, their hoppy red ale. Also had Hopperbolic from Beechwood Brewing down Long Beach, and then from Green Cheek Beer Co. in Orange County had Birds Are Real. It was a West Coast IPA. So not an extensive list, but good enough. Definitely enjoyable.
I have not broken out the pumpkins yet, but I think we're getting there. I usually like to actually wait until it's fall, and I guess it is technically fall today. So we're definitely approaching that time. Well, I'll also be upstate, so I actually might run into some pumpkin. I'll be in the Boston area for a couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, at least you get like really pumpkin ale is probably like one of the better ones we'll get around here.
I like the Shipyard too. I haven't seen it in a while though.
It's pretty much like sitting around like Total Wine around here. But yeah,
I feel like I used to see it in bars more, and now I think it's in liquor stores. I just haven't seen it on tap as much, but that's a solid one.
Yeah, it's definitely good. Definitely no complaints here. There's not really a ton of like local options there.
I feel like it's definitely more of like a Northeast type deal. Which I guess makes sense. Like, I guess we have more gourds out here.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like for us, it's definitely not like a priority for breweries. I think also because it's not really fall weather.
Yeah, that's fair. It definitely, like, you know, say what you will. It is an appropriate flavor, I think, for the season. Yes, I will make my bold prediction that I will have my first pumpkin of the year because I will be in the southern tier from Sunday until Wednesday, which also means we have to figure out recording, but we'll figure that out.
Good. All right. So pivoting from beer back to football, Dan, what is, I guess, your biggest concern going into this game? I'm assuming it's Malik Willis.
It's Malik Willis. he's really good. I think like some of the hype's a little crazy around him. I saw I think it was Kuiper said he could be like the first pick in the draft, and I'll tone that down.
That's aggressive.
But he's very good. Like he's a really, really good dual threat college quarterback. On the year, sits under 13 yards, completing 70% of his throws, 8.9 per attempt, 7 touchdowns and picks. He leads the team in rushing, 225 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like he is the offense. They don't have they have some solid still players, but I think he's really
Josh Mack drives
this entire thing.
Josh Mack crushed us this year.
Josh Mack destroyed us last year. He's actually not having a great year. He's only averaging 3.2 yards per carry. TJ Green's actually been the more productive running back for them, but Willis is by a decent margin, by almost 100 yards, the leading rusher. Demario Douglas is their leading receiver, 16 catches for 185 and 2 touchdowns, but they spread it out a fair amount. I think it's if we can contain Willis and force him into some mistakes, which it looked like we might do early last year, we can you know, be successful here. I know our defense is probably the best one he will have gone up against. He has not thrown an interception yet this year. I don't know if that's just because the opposing defenses haven't been great or if he's just taken another step forward. Either one could be possible. I think that's going to be the whole game. Is if we make Willis struggle, I think we'll have a very, very good chance of jumping on Liberty. If not, and it's like last season, obviously, you know, it's going to get a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, while Syracuse has a, like, at this point, like, decade and a half history of struggling against mobile quarterbacks, with few exceptions, I do feel like Pat White and who else was at Geno Smith might be the exceptions. Shout out to West Virginia, in terms of guys that they struggled against with some mobility. I do feel that while Willis could still get his yards and he'll definitely test this defense, I do feel like what was presented against Liberty last year is not indicative of what we see this year. I think this is a much better linebacker group with a lot more experience this year. I think the defensive backs, while it's a lot of the same players, I think they have a ton more experience. And as much as, you know, you miss guys like Iffy and Cisco and Trill Williams, I think this group, you know, has kind of been forged in the fires of needing to figure it out. And so I do like what they can do. And obviously, you know, Deuce Chestnut and Garrett Williams should be able to do some things. I think we'll see whether, like, the one thing I will say about this defense is while it's been, I think the coverage has been good. I think they've done a great job of bending but not breaking in every game so far, even the loss to Rutgers. I do feel that what we haven't seen is that turnover focus. And that was just such a hallmark of the defenses since, you know, 2018, pretty much. And this year, it's definitely not as big of a focus. And maybe that's just because we don't have, you know, the same level of big playmaker in that regard, but I would take sound coverage over that. And obviously you lose a guy like Cisco, a guy like Trill, two guys who are very takeaway focused. That'll happen. But yeah, I think that we're potentially a better coverage team this year. I think that we're able to rotate in a lot of bodies. And I think we're getting a much better push up front, from the three down linemen than we did last year. So I do feel like that's going to help contain things a lot. The issue is going to be, as always with a mobile quarterback, is what can you, like, if you're not going to contain him, what can you do once he rolls out of the pocket? And that's always, I think last year that was just obviously nothing that we could do was going to stop Willis. But I think this team, this defense in particular is much, much better this year. And that could lead to not a low scoring game, but maybe a game that surprisingly clocks in with the winning team scoring fewer than 30 points.
Yeah, I mean, we could. If you look at the Troy game, Willis was very effective, but he only threw the ball 18 times. No one had more than 41 receiving yards. I didn't watch the game, but it seems like they kind of kept things in front of them, the Troy defense, which is ranked out pretty well. And then Willis ran the ball 20 times for 93 yards, which isn't great, but if your quarterback is running the ball 20 times and he's averaging 4.7 yards a carry, like, when your quarterback breaks contain, you want those big chunk plays. And it seemed like Willis was just kind of grinding it out. And I don't know, if we could kind of limit him, take away the deep pass, take away the stuff that's going to break the top of the defense open, and just get a lot of licks on Willis and make him kind of the focal point with his legs, but keeping him in contain, I think we could have some success. And they kept Liberty to 21 points. So I think we'd have a decent chance if we kept Liberty in that range. Obviously, Troy didn't capitalize with more than 13, but you know, it shows that not, you know, Willis hasn't torched everyone. Like, obviously, he was very productive in that game, but it wasn't the type of two-way, like, domination that we've seen him at other times.
I don't want to ascribe this to Willis, but I do feel like at the same time, once you start getting that top of the draft board hype, there's a chance that, you know, risk-taking might start coming into play in terms of, like, do you want to, you know, do that extra thing that could get you hurt. But also, like, once you know that you have a, like, you know, $20 million payday headed your way in less than 12 months, are you going to do that? And that's not, like, Willis is far from the only player that's probably ever processed that information or and processed those sort of decision-making issues. I think that realistically, like, I think it's a little too early in the season for that, but I am curious if we see maybe a little more caution on his end. And the stats so far haven't necessarily indicated that, but like you've said, this is definitely the best defense he's faced all year so far. And ultimately, like, one of the better opponents he'll face. And that's not to, like, toot our horn too loudly, but more just to say that he's going to be up against a different style of defense than maybe he's used to. And it might mean that he could still get to the same totals that he got in the first three games, but it might be a lot harder to come by. And I am curious how that factors into his decision-making.
Yeah, I will certainly sign for, like, Willis is probably going to get his, but as long as we don't let a Green or a Mac or someone else like last year just really explode on us, like, I'll take my chances there.
Yeah, I completely agree there. Like, the last year's issues were in large part due to, you know, the fact that you couldn't stop the run with Mac. So then you needed, so, you know, what else could you do? Because once you had two different players running all over you, I mean, it becomes very, very hard to game plan. And I don't think that the Syracuse team is going to be as susceptible to that sort of issue. And again, it's not to say that like this team is going, like, Liberty is going to struggle against us. But it is to say that it's definitely not going to be as easy of a time. But Dan, because now we only have a few minutes left, shifting to the other side of the ball. To me, I'm interested to see what freshman defensive tackle Kendi Charles is able to do against the Syracuse front. Maybe the fact that he plays tackle is concerning to me, and he's able to get four sacks from the middle of the line is concerning, given the fact that we've had some struggles in the middle. I don't know what sort of offensive line is going to be trotted out there for Syracuse because we did see you know, Mike Schmidt and Coach Babers definitely shuffled some things around to test some things last week. And really, I think that was part of the reason why we saw a little more pressure than you probably would have expected from Albany. But I am curious if they're able to create the same sort of pressure that they have against other opponents against us. When it does seem like, for the most part, a lot of the pressure generated by the Flames is going to be from the middle of the line, which is probably not something we're used to.
No, I mean, that's always troublesome. Like, if you watch NFL, like, there's a reason Aaron Donald is probably the best defensive player in football. When you can generate pressure from the middle without a really sustained pass rush or bringing pressure from the linebackers, it's a real issue, especially because, you know, oftentimes the best offensive linemen are playing tackle. If you can exploit guards instead of having to have, like, a dominant defensive end, like, it's a real issue. And also, like, we've seen some of the issues that Tommy's had with getting flushed out, throwing interceptions when he's moved out of the pocket. Like, he's obviously cut down on that a lot since a couple of years ago when it was a major issue, but it's still a little bit disconcerting if he's forced out of the pocket pretty often from the middle. So, yeah, we'll see. I think the offensive line's definitely played better this year. It's definitely been an improvement, but it's still not it's a work in progress. So hopefully we'll see a nice step forward against a pretty talented defensive front. But it definitely poses some specific issues, especially with the fact that the middle of our offensive line remains pretty unsettled.
Agreed. So Dan, putting you on the spot, what do you think is going to happen in this one?
Unfortunately, I'm going to lean in the wrong direction. I'm going to take Liberty just on the strength of having the best player on the field. And they're just, you know, overall, they're in a better place to support him than us. And, you know, at least it won't be as attention grabbing this year if it happens. But I'm going to take a close Liberty win. I'll go 31-23.
All right. Yeah, I unfortunately, and until I see something from this offense against an FBS program, like something real against an FBS program, I and really that's less a knock on the players than it is a knock on the play calling. I hope we just see a hefty dose of Sean Tucker. I hope we see some folds in the passing game where needed, but I hope we don't try to do too much like we did, I think, in the late third and early fourth quarter against Rutgers. I think in general, this is a game Syracuse can win, but I think Vegas has this pretty well pegged, somewhere the line somewhere between 6 and 7 right now. I'll say Liberty 27, Syracuse 21, and that's less a compliment to Liberty's defense as much as it's a knock on Syracuse's offense. And again, throw that out the window if SU gives the ball to Sean Tucker, who should be able to pick up yards, not at the same level he did last week against this defense, but will be able to do some damage against this defense for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he's the bell cow. Let's obviously we came into the year saying, talk about a running back depth. And it was nice to see some Jarvion Howard last week. Getting him involved. Obviously we've seen the sprinkling of Abdul Adams. It's very clear Sean Tucker's a guy. So while I want to keep him fresh, dead in the ball, let's see what he can do.
Agreed. Well, Dan, much appreciated as always. Hopefully we're both wrong about this game.
Yeah, please, when we win, please trash talk us on Twitter. I'll be more than happy.
Definitely at me if we win.
Yes, please at me.
Well, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and Go Orange.
Go Orange.